Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we are going to start a new paper, Paper 164, Feast of the Dedication. Feast of Dedication, not the Dedication. And that's on page 1800.1 in the original book, and 164.01 on the rest of them. But also other things popping up here. And let me change this out and we'll get started. Rodney, we're going to do something a little different tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to read the first paragraph, and then there's another paragraph underneath this here in a second. I want you to read it for me, okay?
Okay.
Because it's pretty long. I don't want Diane to
No
have to
problem.
fumble through it. So,
Oh,
why
why
can't
can't I
I
what?
fumble through it?
Thank you.
Because it's pretty broken up
Okay.
this
All
way.
right.
All right, paper 164, at the Feast of Dedication, as the camp at Pella was being established, Jesus talking,
Roger,
taking,
Diane needs to
mute.
mute.
I'm sorry.
I'm
I'm
sorry.
sorry.
That's no
Okay.
problem.
All right, let's try that again. As the camp at Pella was being established, Jesus, taking with him Nathanael and Thomas, secretly went up to Jerusalem to attend the Feast of the Dedication. And that's what this next paragraph is about. It tells what the Feast of Dedication is. Okay. All right. Not until they passed over the Jordan at the Bethany Ford did the two apostles become aware that their master was going on to Jerusalem. When they perceived that he really intended to be present at the Feast of Dedication, they remonstrated with him most earnestly, and using every sort of argument, they sought to dissuade him. But their efforts were of no avail. Jesus was determined to visit Jerusalem. To all their entreaties and to all their warnings, emphasizing the folly and danger of placing himself in the hands of the Sanhedrin, he would reply only, "I would give these teachers in Israel another opportunity to see the light before my hour comes." So he already knew he was going to go to Jerusalem and that he was going to be okay in doing so. And this is the map of where they went during this period of time. Okay, and this is the long broken up thing I was talking about, Rodney.
Okay.
And it's a side note. This is not in the book. This just tells us what the Feast of the Dedication is
Oh,
or
no. Okay.
was. So
Okay.
I'll
I'll
let you
give it
take
my
this.
best shot.
All right.
Side note, the Feast of Dedication today,
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. Thank you.
Yes. Now, what they're saying is the Feast of Dedication is called Hanukkah now.
Okay,
Okay.
once also called Feast of the Maccabees, was a Jewish festival observed for 8 days from the 25th of Kislev, usually in December, but occasionally late November, due to the lunisolar calendar. It was instituted in the year 165 BC by Judas Maccabeus, his brothers, and the elders of the congregation of Israel in commemoration of the reconsecration of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem, and especially of the altar of burnt offerings. After they had been desecrated during the persecution under Antiochus
Antiochus
Epiphanes,
Epiphanes. Venice.
168 BC. The significant happenings of the festival were the illumination of houses and synagogues, a custom probably taken over from the Feast of Tabernacles, and the recitation of Psalms 31 through 12. J. Welzhausen suggested that the feast was originally connected with the winter solstice, and only afterwards with the events narrated in Maccabees. The Feast of Dedication is also mentioned in John 10:22, where it mentions Jesus being at the Jerusalem temple during the Feast of the Dedication, and further notes, and it was winter. The Greek term used in John is the renewals, parenthesis, Greek,
Don't worry about that. I looked all this
Vincania.
stuff up years ago. So,
Okay, just Sive refers to the festival in Greek simply as the lights. So, in other
okay.
words, this is where perhaps Christmas came from.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe. And that's all I could find on the Feast of the Dedication back when I first read this long time ago. And here's a picture of the temple and the burnt offering place there. I'll look at that later if you want to. All right, Diane, would you take the next scene?
On they went towards Jerusalem, the two apostles continuing to express their feelings of fear and to voice their doubts about the wisdom of such an apparently presumptuous undertaking. They reached Jericho about 4:30 and prepared to lodge there for the night.
You're muted, Roger.
Sorry. So they lodged in Jericho. Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. Number one, story of the Good Samaritan. That evening, a considerable company gathered about Jesus and the two apostles to ask questions, many of which the apostles answered, while others the master discussed. In the course of the evening, a certain lawyer seeking to entangle Jesus in a compromising disputation said, "Teacher, I would like to ask you just what I should do to inherit eternal life." Jesus answered, "What is written in the law and the prophets? How do you read the scriptures?" The lawyer, knowing the teachings of both Jesus and the Pharisees, answered, "To love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself." Then said Jesus, "You have answered right. This, if you really do, will lead to life everlasting."
Which is basically the gospel, right? The fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, right? So you answered that right. Okay, but the lawyer was not wholly sincere in asking this question and desired to justify himself while also hoping to embarrass Jesus. He ventured to ask still another question, drawing a little closer to the master. He said, "But teacher, I should like you to tell me who is my neighbor." The lawyer asked this question, hoping to entrap Jesus into making some statement that would contravene the Jewish law, which defined one's neighbor as the children of one's people. Sorry, y'all.
No problem.
The Jews looked upon all others as Gentile dogs. This lawyer was somewhat familiar with Jesus' teaching and therefore well knew that the master thought differently. Thus, he hoped to lead him into saying something which could be construed as an attack upon the sacred law. So he was trying to entrap him, basically, right? All right.
But Jesus discerned the lawyer's motive, and instead of falling into the trap, he proceeded to tell his hearers a story. A story which would be fully appreciated by any Jericho audience. Said Jesus, "A certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell into the hands of cruel brigands who robbed him, stripped him, and beat him, and departing left him half dead. Very soon, by chance, a certain priest was going down the way, and when he came back upon the wounded man, seeking his sorry plight, he passed by on the other side of the road, and in like manner, a Levite also. And when he came along and saw the man pass by on the other side, now about this time, a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed down to Jericho, came across this wounded man. And when he saw how he had been robbed and beaten, he was moved with compassion, and going over to him, he bound up his wounds, powdered on oil, and pouring on oil and wine, and setting the man upon his own beast, okay, brought him here to the inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, he took out some money, and giving it to the host, said, "Take good care of my friend, and if the expense is more, when I come back again, I will pay you. Now, let me ask you, which of these three turned out to be the neighbor of him who fell among the robbers?" And when the lawyer perceived that he had fallen into the other snare, he had fallen into his own snare, he answered, "He who showed mercy on him." And Jesus said, "Go and do likewise."
Okay, so to understand this, we must understand that the Samaritans were considered the lowest on the scale of human beings. Okay, so they were, you know, considered dirt.
Because they were kind?
No, because they were just a different mindset than the other. Okay, so it would be like today, one group of people looking with disdain on another group of people. Okay, so if you were, for instance, Christian, and you didn't like Muslims, or for instance, the Muslims would be the Samaritan in this case. So basically what he's saying, that we should all treat each other with love and kindness, regardless of what backgrounds we are, or what group we belong to, or race. All right. Okay. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. The lawyer answered, "He who showed mercy, that he might refrain from even speaking that odious word, Samaritan." The lawyer was forced to give the very answer to the question, "Who is my neighbor?" which Jesus wished given, and which, if Jesus had so stated, would have directly involved him in the charge of heresy. Jesus not only confounded the dishonest lawyer, but he told his hearers a story which was at the same time a beautiful admonition to all his followers and a stunning rebuke to all Jews regarding their attitude toward the Samaritans. And this story has continued to promote brotherly love among all who have subsequently believed the gospel of Jesus.
And that's the truth, isn't it? Because everybody yes, knows the story of the Good Samaritan, right?
Yep.
All right. Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. Two.
Oops, sorry, Letch. Okay, there we go.
Number two, at Jerusalem. Jesus had attended the Feast of Tabernacles that he might proclaim the gospel to the pilgrims from all parts of the empire. He now went up to the feast of the dedication for just one purpose, to give the Sanhedrin and the Jewish leaders another chance to see the light. The principal event of these few days in Jerusalem occurred on Friday night at the home of Nicodemus. Here were gathered together some 25 Jewish leaders who believed Jesus' teaching. Among this group were 14 men who were then, or had recently been, members of the Sanhedrin. This meeting was attended by Eber Matadormus and Joseph Arimathea.
They were pretty high up in the Sanhedrin, right? All right. On this occasion, Jesus's hearers were all learned men, and both they and his two apostles were amazed at the breadth and depth of the remarks which the master made to this distinguished group. Not since the times when he had taught in Alexandria, Rome, and in the islands of the Mediterranean had he exhibited such learning and shown such a grasp of the affairs of men, both secular and religious. All right. Diane.
When this little meeting broke up, all went away mystified by the master's personality, charmed by his gracious manner, and in love with the man. They had sought to advise Jesus concerning his desire to win the remaining members of the Sanhedrin. The master listened attentively, but silently, to all their proposals. He well knew none of their plans would work. He surmised that the majority of the Jewish leaders never would accept the gospel of the kingdom. Nevertheless, he gave them all this one more chance to choose. But when he went forth that night with Nathanael and Thomas to lodge on the Mount of Olives, he had not yet decided upon the method he would pursue in bringing the work once more to the notice of the Sanhedrin.
Okay, so he did.
You're muted.
I said that he had not decided what he was going to do to bring them to a decision about this, but he already knew that these men hated him so much that they would probably not follow him regardless of what he said. So
he wanted to do something to get their attention.
He had to do something to get their attention. And it's interesting because the men at the house there he was talking to were mostly believers in him, and they wanted to get as many of the Sanhedrin to believe in him as well so that they could stop this ridiculousness which they had started. And he knew that that was not going to be the case, regardless of what they did, right? All right. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. That night, Nathanael and Thomas slept little. They were too much amazed by what they had heard in Nicodemus's house. They thought much over the final remark of Jesus regarding the offer of the former and present members of the Sanhedrin to go with him before the 70. The master said, "No, my brethren, it would be of no purpose. You would multiply the wrath to be visited upon your own heads, but you would not in the least mitigate the hatred which they bear me. Go, each of you, about the Father's business, as the Spirit leads you, while I once more bring the kingdom to the notice in the manner which my Father may direct."
So he knew that they wasn't going to do anything, right? He really did. And he didn't want the leaders that he had that were following him to get the wrath of the Sanhedrin too at the same time. All right, Letch, would you take the next one?
Okay, number three, healing the blind beggar. The next morning, the three went over to Martha's home at Bethany for breakfast and then went immediately into Jerusalem. This Sabbath morning, as Jesus and his two apostles drew near the temple, they encountered a well-known beggar, a man who had been born blind, sitting at his usual place. Although these mendicants did not solicit or receive alms on the Sabbath day, they were permitted thus to sit in their usual places. Jesus paused and looked upon the beggar. As he gazed upon this man who had been born blind, the idea came into his mind as to how he would once more bring his mission on earth to the notice of the Sanhedrin and the other Jewish leaders and religious teachers.
Okay, dear, I want to mention one thing here. This not only should have convinced the Sanhedrin that Jesus was of God, but it's kind of a indication of what he did, making the blind see. He was at the same time trying to make the blind Sanhedrin leaders see the spiritual truth. Okay.
See the light.
Yeah. So it had a dual purpose.
Metaphor.
It's a metaphor, right? All right. As the master stood there before the blind man, engrossed in deep thought, Nathanael, pondering the possible cause of the man's blindness, asked, "Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" All right. Diane.
The rabbi is taught that all such cases of blindness from birth were caused by sin. Oh, that's awful. Not only were children conceived and born in sin, but a child could be born blind as a punishment for some specific sin committed by its father. They even taught that a child itself might sin before it was born into the world. They also taught that such defects could be caused by some sin or other indulgence of the mother while carrying the child. Boy, that was just awesome.
Now we know all of this is not true, right?
Of course.
It's ridiculous.
Superstition.
Yeah. We held on to the same sort of superstition to believe what Paul taught, that we were all born in sin from Adam and Eve, right?
Yeah.
The fall of man, if you would. And there was no fall of man, but that's what they taught, right? And that's what's in the New Testament. There never has been a fall of man, and there never will be a fall of man. We all have the choices to make in our life, and we all have thought adjusters to help make these choices, don't we? So we know none of this is true. This is just ridiculous superstition. And the fact that they would even ask Jesus this shows their lack of understanding of what they've been learning from him. Okay. Rodney, would you take the next one?
There was throughout all these regions a lingering belief in reincarnation. The older Jewish teachers, together with Plato, Philo, and many of the Essenes, tolerated the theory that man may reap in one incarnation what they have sown in a previous existence. Thus, in one life, they were believed to be expiating the sins committed in preceding lives. The master found it difficult to make men believe that their souls had not had previous existences.
And that's still the case today, is it not? There's still people that believe in reincarnation, that believe they were Pharaoh, and they believe they were this and that and the other. They believe they existed before, but no one existed before they started living on this planet. They didn't have a pre-existence. All right. Okay, Litch, would you take the next?
However inconsistent as it seems, while such blindness was supposed to be the result of sin, the Jews held that it was meritorious in a high degree to give alms to these blind beggars. It was the custom of these blind men constantly to chant to the passers-by, "O tender-hearted, gain merit by assisting the blind."
So by assisting the blind, they were supposed to be get points, right? Yeah, I talk about a double standard.
Like indulgences.
Yeah.
And perhaps more wealthy.
Yes. Jesus entered into the discussion in this case with Nathanael and Thomas, not only because he had already decided to use this blind man as the means of the day, bringing his mission once more prominently to the notice of the Jewish leaders, but also because he was always encouraged his apostles to seek for the true causes of all phenomena, natural or spiritual. He had often warned them to avoid the common tendency to assign spiritual causes to commonplace physical events. And we pretty much do the same thing in our lives today, right? Right.
Jesus decided to use this beggar in his plans for that day's work. But before doing anything for the blind man, Josiah by name, he proceeded to answer Nathanael's question. Said the master, "Neither did this man sin, nor his parents, that the works of God might be manifest in him. This blindness has come upon him in the natural course of events, but we must now do the works of him who sent me. While it is still day, for the night will certainly come when it will be impossible to do the work we are going to perform. When I am in the world, I am the light of the world, but in only a little while, I will not be with you."
I want to point something out here in this paragraph too, which people may not like, but I'm going to say it anyway. All right. He talks about the day and the night. Their night will come when they cannot no longer perform this work. What is he talking about here? He is the light of the world, and soon I will not be with you. Because this man was born physically blind at birth, he had no eyes, okay? In other words, his eyes did not function whatsoever. Now, Jesus being the creator son, when he performed this miracle, and this is a full-blown miracle any way you look at it, but normal people, even if they have faith and everything else, would not be able to perform the same kind of miracle because Jesus is the creator son. He has the power of creation. Okay. And only a creator son would be able to take nothing whatsoever in this man's eye sockets and create it into fully functioning eyes. That's the point I want to make here. Okay. So even if you have faith and you heal people and stuff like this, don't expect to take a person born completely blind and make them see, because you are not a creator son. Okay, you don't have that capability. Yeah, Rodney. Let's see.
Number one, I like the name Josiah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool name. Because it's the Sabbath day, once it got dark, it would be Sunday.
Right.
So it's important he did this on Sunday because it would get their attention.
Yes. If he waited till Monday, then it's not something he's going against to them, is it?
Correct. Right.
Well, it would be
even
going
if he waited
against
until after dark, it would be too late.
That's right. That's right. All right. Okay. Who was up next? You are, Rodney, I think.
Okay. When Jesus had spoken, he said to Nathanael and Thomas, "Let us create the sight of this blind man on this Sabbath day, that the scribes and Pharisees may have the full occasion which they seek for, accusing the Son of Man." Then, stooping over, he spat on the ground and mixed the clay with the spittle, and speaking all of this so that the blind man could hear her, he went up to Josiah and put the clay over his sightless eyes, saying, "Go, my son, wash away this clay in the pool of Siloam, and immediately you shall receive your sight." And when Josiah had so washed in the pool of Siloam, he returned to his friends and family, seeing.
Now, it's important for us to understand that Jesus could have just touched this man's head and created his sight, couldn't he?
Yeah.
But he did the spittle thing because Josiah believed in the power of spittle from a prophet. And so he went through this process so that Josiah could understand what is happening to him, mm-hmm. right? He could have just said, "Have sight," and he would have had sight because he's the creator's son, right? Also, here's what Rodney was talking about in the last slide about it being the Sabbath day. If he would have done this on Monday, they wouldn't have had cause to accuse him.
Correct.
Right. And since he did it on the Sabbath, they did have cause to accuse him. And this is just a picture of that. All right. Letch, would you take the next?
Okay. Having always been a beggar, he knew nothing else. So when the first excitement of the creation of his sight had passed, he returned to his usual place of alms-seeking. His friends, neighbors, and all who had known him aforetime, when they observed that he could see, all said, "Is this not Josiah the blind beggar?" Some said it was he, while others said, "No, it is one like him, but this man can see." But when they asked the man himself, he answered, "I am he."
Well, since he could see, they thought it was somebody else, right?
Of course.
When they began to inquire of him how he was able to see, he answered them, "A man called Jesus came by this way, and when talking about me with his friends, he made clay with spittle, anointing my eyes and directing that I should go wash in the pool of Siloam. I did what this man told me, and immediately I received my sight. And that is only a few hours ago. I do not yet know the meaning of such that I see." And when the people who began to gather about him asked where they could find this strange man who had healed him, Josiah answered only that he did not know. He didn't understand the things he was seeing, did he? Because he had never had eyesight. All right. So this is all new to him. All right, Diane.
This is one of the strangest of all the master's miracles. This man did not ask for healing. He did not know that the Jesus who had directed him to wash at Siloam and who had promised him vision was the prophet of Galilee who had preached in Jerusalem during the Feast of Tabernacles. This man had little faith that he would receive his sight, but the people of the day had great faith in the efficacy of the spittle of a great or holy man. And when from Jesus' conversation with Nathanael and Thomas, Josiah had concluded that his would-be benefactor was a great man, a learned teacher, or a holy prophet. Accordingly, he did as Jesus directed him.
So because he thought Jesus was a prophet, he got up and did what he told him to do. Rodney, would you take this next one and the one after this
yes.
too?
Jesus made use of the clay and the spittle and directed him to wash in the symbolic pool of Siloam for three reasons. One, this was not a miracle response to the individual's faith. This was a wonder which Jesus chose to perform for a purpose of his own, but which he so arranged that this man might derive lasting benefit therefrom.
So he didn't ask for healing or anything. This is just Jesus' decision, right? Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. As the blind man had not asked for healing, And since the faith he had was slight, these material acts were suggested for the purpose of encouraging him. He did believe in the superstition of the efficacy of spittle, and he knew the pool of Siloam was a semi-sacred place, but he would hardly have gone there had it not been necessary to wash away the clay of his anointing. There was just enough ceremony about the transaction to induce him to act.
So since he had clay in his eyes, he had to do something, right? So didn't have much choice. But Jesus had a third reason for resorting to these material means in connection with this unique transaction. This is a miracle wrought purely in obedience to his own choosing. And thereby he desired to teach his followers of that day and all subsequent ages to refrain from despising or neglecting material means in the healing of the sick. He wanted to teach them that they must cease to regard miracles as the only method of curing human disease. So he wanted to put it out there that you must physically do something to heal your own diseases.
Okay. In other words, medicine.
Medicine. That's why we have medicine. That's why we have braces. That's why we have things. When you break a leg, you have casts put around it, stuff. You have to do the things that you need to physically heal. All right, Diane.
Jesus gave this man his sight by miraculous working on the Sabbath morning and in Jerusalem near the temple for the prime purpose of making this act an open challenge to the Sanhedrin and all the Jewish teachers and religious leaders. This was his way of proclaiming an open break with the Pharisees. He was always positive in everything he did, and it was for the purpose of bringing these matters before the Sanhedrin that Jesus brought his two apostles to this man early in the afternoon of the Sabbath day and deliberately provoked those discussions which compelled the Pharisees to take notice of the miracle.
So it was the apostles that took this man before the Sanhedrin, okay, so that they would know what happened, okay? So, all right, Josiah before the Sanhedrin. Rodney.
Okay. By mid-afternoon, the healing of Josiah had raised such a discussion around the temple that the leaders of the Sanhedrin decide to convene the council in its usual temple meeting place. And they did this in violation of a standing rule which forbade the meeting of the Sanhedrin on the Sabbath day. Jesus knew that Sabbath breaking would be one of the chief charges to be brought against him when the final test came. And he desired to be brought before the Sanhedrin for adjudication of the charge of having healed a blind man on the Sabbath day, when the very session of the high Jewish court sitting in judgment on him for this act of mercy would be deliberating on these matters on the Sabbath day and in direct violation of their own self-imposed laws.
So he was trying to set up a catch-22 on him, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. He was trying to say, well, you know, if you bring me in and adjudicate me for healing on the Sabbath, you're not supposed to have meetings on the Sabbath to do mm-hmm. this.
Right? Should have taught him a lesson.
Yeah, should have. All right. Letch, would you take the next one?
But they did not call Jesus before them. They feared to. Instead, they sent forthwith for Josiah. After some preliminary questioning, the spokesman for the Sanhedrin, about 50 members being present, directed Josiah to tell them what had happened to him. Since his healing that morning, Josiah had learned from Thomas Nathanael and others that the Pharisees were angry about his healing on the Sabbath, and that they were likely to make trouble for all concerned. But Josiah did not yet perceive that Jesus was he who was called the deliverer. So when the Pharisees questioned him, he said, "This man came along, put clay upon my eyes, told me to go wash in Siloam, and I do now see."
All right, so he's confused about all this, right? You know, he just knows that this guy told him to go wash his eyes and he could see afterwards, right? Okay. Gary, you want to try to take the next one?
We're 30 megabytes per second, and then those Zoom calls are if we're below, then we're still going to be experiencing that same.
Okay, Gary's talking to someone.
Okay,
let me go ahead and take this on.
Think he's back.
Should I give it a try or not?
Yeah, go ahead. Give it a try if you're there. Yeah.
But your thing says it's too slow.
Go ahead and give it a try. I'm getting a voice from somewhere else, Gary.
Yeah. Strange.
Do you have somebody else on the phone, Gary?
Going to speedtest.net.
Okay, I got to get out of this meeting.
I'll go ahead and take this. One of the older Pharisees, after making a lengthy speech, said, "This man cannot be from God because you can see that he does not observe the Sabbath. He violates the law first in making the clay. Then in sending this beggar to wash in Siloam on the Sabbath day, such a man cannot be a teacher sent from God because making the clay was considered illegal." Yeah, you can't win here.
Then one of the younger men who secretly believed in Jesus said, "If this man is not sent by God, how can he do these things? We know that one who is a common sinner cannot perform such miracles. We all know this beggar and that he was born blind. Now he sees. Will you still say that this prophet does all these wonders by the power of the prince of devils?" And for every Pharisee who dared to accuse and denounce Jesus, one would arise to ask entangling and embarrassingly questions, so that a serious division arose among them. The presiding officer saw whither they were drifting, and in order to allay the discussion, he prepared further to question the man himself. Turning to Josiah, he said, "What do you have to say about this man, this Jesus, whom you claim opened your eyes?" And Josiah answered, "I think he is a prophet."
So he says right off the bat, he thinks he's a prophet.
How could you think anything else?
Yeah, how could you think anything else? Rodney, would you take the next one?
The leaders were greatly troubled, and knowing not what else to do, decide to send for Josiah's parents to learn whether he had actually been born blind. They were loath to believe that the beggar had been healed.
So they would do anything and everything they could to keep from admitting that he had been healed by Jesus, right? All right, Letch, would you take the next one, please?
It was well known about Jerusalem, not only that Jesus was denied entrance into all synagogues, but that all who believed in his teaching were likewise cast out of the synagogue, excommunicated from the congregation of Israel. And this meant denial of all rights and privileges of every sort throughout all Jewry, except the right to buy the necessaries of life.
Does this not sound like the Catholic Church, too? You know, yeah. It really does. Then, therefore, Josiah's parents, poor and fear-burdened souls, appeared before the August Sanhedrin. They were afraid to speak freely, said that the spokesman of the court, "Is this your son? And do we understand to right that he was born blind? And if this is true, how is it that he can now see?" And then Josiah's father, seconded by his mother, answered, "We know that this is his son and he was born blind. But how is it that he has come to see, or who was it that opened his eyes? We do not know. Ask him. He's of age. Let him speak for himself."
They now called Josiah up before them a second time. They were not getting along well with their scheme of holding a formal trial, and some were beginning to feel strange about doing this on the Sabbath. Accordingly, when they recalled Josiah, they attempted to ensnare him by a different mode of attack. The officer of the court spoke to the former blind man, saying, "Why do you not give God the glory for this? Why do you not tell us the whole truth about what happened? We all know that the man is a sinner. Why do you refuse to discern the truth? You know that both you and this man stand convicted of Sabbath breaking. Will you not atone for your sin by acknowledging God as your healer? If you still claim that your eyes have the day been opened."
Sabbath
break. They're still doing everything they can to keep from admitting, right? All right, Rodney, did you take the notes?
But Josiah was neither dumb nor lacking in humor. So he replied to the officer of the court, "Whether this man is a sinner, I know not. But one thing I do know, that whereas I was blind, now I see." And since they could not entrap Josiah, they sought further to question him, asking, "Just how did he open your eyes? What did he actually do to you? What did he say to you? Did he ask you to believe in him?"
Going around in circles. Letch, would you take the next?
Josiah replied somewhat impatiently, "I have told you exactly how it all happened. And if you did not believe my testimony, why would you hear it again? Would you by any chance also become his disciples?"
But they loved that, didn't they?
When Josiah had thus spoken, the Sanhedrin broke up in confusion, almost violence, for the leaders rushed upon Josiah, angrily exclaiming, "You may talk about being this man's disciple, but we are disciples of Moses, and we are the teachers of the laws of God. We know that God spoke through Moses, but as for this man, Jesus, we know not whence he is."
Oh, me. Don't you feel sorry for him, don't you? Then Josiah, standing up on a stool, shouted abroad to all who would hear, saying, "Hearken, you who claim to be the teachers of all Israel. While I declare to you that herein is a great marvel, since you confess that you do not know whence this man is, and yet you know of a certainty from the testimony which you have heard that he opened my eyes. We all know that God does not perform such works for the ungodly, that God would do such a thing only at the request of a true worshiper, for one who is holy and righteous. You know that not since the beginning of the world have you ever heard of the opening of the eyes of one who was born blind. Look then, all of you, upon me and realize what has been done this day in Jerusalem. I tell you, if this man were not from God, he could not do this. And as the Sanhedrin departed in anger and confusion, they shouted to him, "You were altogether born in sin, and you do not, and do you now presume to teach us?" Looks like he is, right? "Maybe you were not really born blind. Even if your eyes were open on the Sabbath day, this was done by the power of the princes of devils." And when they had once went at once to the synagogue to cast out Josiah, so they cast him out of the synagogue because they didn't want to believe, right? Diane.
Josiah entered this trial with meager ideas about Jesus and the nature of his healing. Most of the daring testimony which he so cleverly and courageously bore before this supreme tribunal of all Israel developed in his mind as the trial proceeded along such unfair and unjust lines.
All right. Teaching on Solomon's porch. Rodney, would you take this one? Oh, sorry, y'all.
All of the time, the Sabbath breaking session of the Sanhedrin was in progress in one of the temple chambers. Jesus was walking about near at hand, teaching the people in Solomon's porch, hoping that he would be summoned before the Sanhedrin, where he could tell them the good news of the liberty and joy of divine sonship in the kingdom of God. But they were afraid to send for him. They were always disconcerted by these sudden and public appearances of Jesus in Jerusalem, the very occasion that they had so ardently sought, Jesus now gave them. But they feared to bring him before the Sanhedrin, even as a witness. And even more, they feared to arrest him.
They were afraid of the revolt of the people, weren't they?
They were confused.
They were confused. Letch, would you take the next one?
Okay. This was midwinter in Jerusalem, and the people sought the partial shelter of Solomon's porch. And as Jesus lingered, the crowds asked him many questions, and he taught them for more than 2 hours. Some of the Jewish teachers sought to entrap him by publicly asking him, "How long will you hold us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, why do you not plainly tell us, say Jesus? I have told you about myself and my Father many times, but you will not believe me. Can you not see that the works I do in my Father's name bear witness for me? But many of you believe not because you belong not to my fold. The teacher of truth attracts only those who hunger for the truth and who thirst for righteousness. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And to all who follow my teaching, I give eternal life. They shall never perish, and no one shall snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given me these children, is greater than all, so that no one is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. The Father and I are one." Some of the unbelieving Jews rushed over to where they were still building the temple to pick up stones to cast at Jesus, but the believers restrained them.
So they would stone him to death right there and then and there, wouldn't they? All right. Jesus continued his teaching, "Many loving works have I shown you from the Father, so that now you would I require, for which one of these good works do you think to stone me?" And then answered one of the Pharisees, "For no good work would we stone you, but for the blasphemy, inasmuch as you, being a man, dare to make yourself equal with God." And Jesus answered, "You charge the Son of Man with blasphemy because you refuse to believe me when I declare to you that I was sent by God? If I do not the works of God, believe me not. But if I do the works of God, even though you believe not in me, you should think I would believe, you would believe in the works. But that you may be certain of what I proclaim, let me again assert that the Father's in me and I in the Father, and that as the Father dwells in me, so will I dwell in everyone who believes in this gospel." Spirit of truth, right? And when the people heard these words, many of them rushed out to lay hands upon the stones to cast at him. But he passed through the temple precincts and meeting Nathanael and Thomas, who were, had been in attendance upon the session of the Sanhedrin. He waited with them near the temple until Josiah came from the council chamber. All right, this is going to wrap this up pretty quick here. Diane.
You're muted, Diane.
Excuse me. Jesus and the two apostles did not go to search of Josiah at his home until they heard he had been cast out of the synagogue. When they came to his house, Thomas called him out in the yard, and Jesus, speaking to him, said, "Josiah, do you believe in the Son of God?" And Josiah answered, "Tell me who he is and is, that I may believe in him." And Jesus said, You have both seen and heard him, and it is he who now speaks to you." And Josiah said, "Lord, I believe," and falling down, he worshiped.
He worshiped him.
Worshipped.
So he acknowledged Jesus as who he was. Yeah. Rodney.
When Josiah learned that he had been cast out of the synagogue, he was at first greatly downcast, but he was much encouraged when Jesus directed that he should immediately prepare to go with them to the camp at Pella. The simple-minded man of Jerusalem had indeed been cast out of a Jewish synagogue. But behold, the creator of a universe leading him forth to become associated with the spiritual nobility of that day and generation.
So he changed his life immediately, didn't he?
Yeah.
Letch, would you take the last one?
And now Jesus left Jerusalem, not again to return until near the time when he prepared to leave this world. With the two apostles and Josiah, the master went back to Pella. And Josiah proved to be one of the recipients of the master's miraculous ministry, who turned out fruitfully, for he became a lifelong preacher of the gospel of the kingdom.
And he became... Yeah, he became a preacher. Okay, next time, we got all the way through a paper tonight. We'll do the Korean Mission Begins. All right, let me swap up. Boy, that was pretty good timing tonight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, you the prayer mix up. Okay, Rodney, you want to do the prayer tonight?
Sure. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise Father, and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By the same faith, I became a child of God, and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebaton, is Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. by allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
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 And thanks all of y'all for coming to see us tonight. Thank you everybody out there and all the ways we're streaming, and go out there and like and share it with everyone, and we will start a new paper next Tuesday, right?
Thank you, Roger.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Good
to
Thanks
see
for coming,
you
everybody. Love you guys. Have
Love
a good
you.
Weekend.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.